when I finally get back, Lord willing, into this pulpit with some regularity, I think, I've been praying about this, I've talked with the staff, pastoral staff about it, I think I want us to spend some time in the Gospel of Mark. I've thought about this. It sounds kind of cliche-ish. It's kind of corny, but it's anything but. I think sometimes it's just good for people to spend some time with Jesus. And so I think that's what we'll do sometime later in the summer, begin to do that. But for this morning, we're going to look in Deuteronomy chapter 4. Turn there, please, if you have not already done so. I want to begin reading in verse 15. We're only looking at a couple of verses here, but they need to be set in context. And so we'll begin reading in verse 15. We'll read down to verse 31. Moses is addressing the people of Israel as they are encamped east of the Jordan River. They have come through the wilderness wanderings for 40 years, and they are now poised to enter into the promised land and take it. And Moses is speaking to them and preparing them for the future, the immediate future. And these are some of the words that he gives to them. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 15. Therefore, watch yourselves very carefully, since you saw no form on the day that the Lord spoke to you at Horeb out of the midst of the fire. Beware lest you act corruptly by making a carved image for yourselves in the form of any figure, the likeness of male or female, the likeness of any animal that is on the earth, the likeness of any winged bird that flies in the air, the likeness of anything that creeps on the ground, the likeness of any fish that is in the water under the earth. And beware lest you raise your eyes to heaven, and when you see the sun and the moon and the stars, all the hosts of heaven, you be drawn away and bow down to them and serve them, things that the Lord your God has allotted to all the peoples under the whole heaven. In other words, this is a warning to them about idolatry. They are going into a land that is rife with idolatries, with idols. And Moses is simply saying to the people of Israel, don't go there. Don't go to the idols. He continues in verse 20. But the Lord has taken you and brought you out of the iron furnace, out of Egypt, to be a people of his own inheritance, as you are this day. Furthermore, the Lord was angry with me because of you, and he swore that I should not cross the Jordan, and that I should not enter the good land that the Lord your God is giving you for an inheritance. For I must die in this land. I must not go over the Jordan, but you shall go over and take possession of that good land. Take care, lest you forget the covenant of the Lord your God, which he made with you, and make a carved image, the form of anything that the Lord your God has forbidden you. For the Lord your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God. When you father children and children's children that have grown old in the land, if you act corruptly by making a carved image in the form of anything, and by doing what is evil in the sight of the Lord your God, so as to provoke him to anger, I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that you will soon utterly perish from the land that you are going over the Jordan to possess. You will not live long in it, but will be utterly destroyed. And the Lord will scatter you among the peoples, and you will be left few in number among the nations where the Lord will drive you, and there you will serve gods of wood and stone, the work of human hands that neither see nor hear nor eat nor smell. Wow, those are the warnings, aren't they? But listen to this promise. But from there, you will seek the Lord your God, and you will find him, if you search after him with all your heart and all your soul. When you are in tribulation, and all these things come upon you in the latter days, you will return to the Lord your God and obey his voice. For the Lord your God is a merciful God. He will not leave you or destroy you, or forget the covenant with your fathers that he swore to them. You know, for a long time around our house, when our children were much smaller than they are now, there was a generic and really not all that bad of an answer that our children would give to us, to Donna and myself, regarding just about any question that we might ask, especially if it was perceived to be a Bible question or a spiritual question. You know how this goes. You've seen it. We might have asked, who made the heavens and the earth? God. Who is Jesus? God. Who forgot to make up his bed? God. You know, interestingly, there might be, if we examine it that closely, there might be at least a smidgen of truth to that answer. After all, the scriptures tell us that God is the ultimate cause of all things. He rules sovereignly and providentially over all things, even the details of his creation. And yet to this day, that answer just sounds a little bit fishy to me. God. Well, the people of Israel, they have been made a people. They have been oppressed. They have been saved. They have been delivered. They are now encamped, ready to go into the promised land, and God is fulfilling all of his promises to them. They are what they are as a nation. They have the blessings and the hope that they have as a people because of God. The right answer here is God. Just a bit of background. We really do need to set this story in its context. You remember Abraham and the covenant that God made with him, made many different promises to him, fulfilled them all. But one of the promises was that Abraham would have many descendants, even more than the stars of the heavens, even more than the grains of sand upon the sea. No one could number them. Also, the Lord promised to Abraham that his descendants would have a land in which they would live. And so God gave him and Sarah the promised son, Isaac. And Jacob was born. And Jacob's sons. And the famine during the days of Jacob, and Joshua sold into slavery into Egypt, and the family moved down into Egypt. Years of plenty there, but also great bondage and oppression at the hands of the Egyptians. The Lord brought the people out of Egypt with a mighty hand and with great miracles. They came out, and he immediately set up this golden calf, and they forgot the Lord. And even so, he remained faithful to them, didn't he? He provided for them as they marched through the wilderness. He fought their battles. He fed them. He clothed them. He gave them direction by cloud during the day, by fire at night. And he brought them there to the east side of the promised land and was about to go in. They were about to go in there and to take what God had promised them. We read in Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 1. If you go back to the beginning of the book, we read this, that they were now standing across the Jordan in the wilderness, in the Arabah opposite Suf, between Paran and Tophel and Laban and Hatzeroth and Disahib. Those name places don't mean anything to you, mean very little to me, except that that positioned the people of Israel right where they needed to be, to see God's mighty hand at work, to give them the land that he had promised to their forefathers so many years previously. What they were about to discover once again, as they had done over and over and over again, is that the God who was with them there at the river, it's a faithful God. They had made a pilgrimage. They had traveled through the wilderness wanderings. You know, people are always on the move. Look at our own history right here in Louisville. You know the names Lewis and Clark. They passed through Louisville on their way westward. They didn't stop here. They were going somewhere else. What about the Puritans who came over to this land? They were leaving one place and coming to another because of religious persecution. They came to a strange land, but for them, it was a land of freedom. Think about the heroes of faith of Hebrews chapter 11. Isn't that one of the most marvelous, most encouraging chapters in all of Scripture? As the writer there just lists for us those who have gone before, Those whom he said possessed a faith that was the assurance of things hoped for, a conviction of things not yet seen. The hope that they had was still out there, not yet possessed. There in the book of Hebrews, the writer tells us that Abraham went out from his place to receive an inheritance, not knowing where he went, but knowing the one who went with him. And that makes all the difference in the world, doesn't it? The writer of Hebrews tells us that all the heroes of the faith died in faith, not having fully received the promises given to them, but having seen them from afar, but being assured of them, that they would be theirs. And so they went from a strange land, and they went from their own country to a new land, to a new country, on the move. All the while knowing the one who was going with them and trusting him. There's some good news here for us as a congregation, as a church. Especially as we find ourselves, again, you've heard me talk about the in-between time. This transition time, going from one place to another in the life of Cedar Creek Baptist Church. There are two verses that I want to pull out here, very simple points. Number one, from verse 20, we discover that the Lord has done something. And in verse 29, there is something that we must do as we continue on the path that the Lord has set before us. The Lord has done something. Let me read that verse for you again. But the Lord has taken you and brought you out of the iron furnace from Egypt to be a people for his own possession as today. I just want to break that statement down into its constituent parts, into its individual parts. Moses says to the people of Israel, but the Lord. I'm going to tell you, this is not just any God. This is the Lord. This is Yahweh. This is Jehovah. This is the personal name of God, of Israel's God, that was revealed to Moses back there in Exodus chapter 3, there at the burning bush. Remember when the Lord came to Moses and said, I want you to go back to Egypt and deliver my people from Egypt. Moses said, who am I? And in fact, not only am I a nobody, Lord, but I don't even know your name. And when I go to the people of Israel and I say, God has told me to come back and deliver you, to lead you out of the land, and I can't even tell them what your name is, they're going to laugh at me. And so the Lord says, here's my name. It is Ehye Asher Ehye. I am that I am. Some have translated that within the context, the larger context of chapter 3, I shall continue to be that which I have always been, that is faithful. The covenant name of God. This God had done things for Israel that he had done for no other nation. He had loved the people of Israel with a love. It was a special love, a covenant love. But the Lord. It's interesting, isn't it, how the Bible, one thing about the Bible is that it always, if we listen to it, if we pay attention, it always draws our gaze back to God. Not to focus on our immediate circumstances, not to focus on those around us, though we will consider those and we must, but time and time again, isn't it amazing? How the Scriptures just point our eyes back to God. He is our hope, isn't he? But the Lord. And Moses continues, he has taken you and brought you out of the iron furnace from Egypt. Well, Israel found herself leaving someplace, going to another. It seems like we're always leaving somewhere and going somewhere. I tell you, I'm getting tired, personally, of leaving a place and going to a place and coming back to a place and going to another place. These last few weeks and the weeks that are before me, I'm just getting tired. Sometimes we get tired, don't we? Seems like movement just makes sense, though. Move to settle in place is to rest. To move is to expend energy, is to grow tired and weary. In fact, in this life, it seems like we're always going somewhere, doesn't it? Always moving from some place to another, from one time to another, from one condition to another. That's who we are and what we are as a church, isn't it? Always on the move. And when you think about it, we're very much like Israel. The Lord spoke to Israel through Moses there earlier in, or a couple of chapters later in Deuteronomy. You remember his words to Israel? He said, the Lord has not loved you because you were great. And it's kind of a loose paraphrase, but the Lord has not loved you because you were great in number. The Lord has not loved you because he's found something in you that would draw out his affections. The Lord has not loved you because you're great in number. That he's not loved you because you're greater than any other nation. No. He has simply loved you. Israel was nothing, in a sense, and yet God loved her. Isn't that what we must say about ourselves? In a very real sense, I am nothing. As a church, we really are nothing but God. But God. He takes that lump of clay that he showed the prophet Jeremiah, and he forms and fashions out of it exactly what he pleases. And that's what he does with his church. That's what he does with us. God has done something, and he is doing something in our midst. But then we're reminded that we ourselves are not merely passive in all of this, but that we must also do something. I understand that the Christian faith is eminently a religion of grace. I tell you, everything that we have in any good sense, anything good that is found within us is only because of his grace that he has shown us in his Son, Jesus Christ. Remember how the Apostle Paul put it to the Corinthians? You're boasting. Why are you boasting about who you are and what you have as if you've accomplished anything? Or as if you are anything, everything that you have is a gift from God. There is a sense in which God is everything and we are nothing. And yet, we are not merely passive in this life. We must do something. Look at verse 29. Moses says to the people, but from there, that is this land into which you are going, you will seek the Lord your God, and you will find him if you search for him with all your heart and all your soul. I am now 62 years old. When I was 16 years old, I was skinny as a rail. When Donna met me, and we went to came here to Louisville for the first time, and then we moved to Indonesia, when I was skinny as a rail. Almost 6'4". Since we came back to the United States, I have put on about 65 pounds. It's a lot of weight. Some weight I need to take off. You know, when I was 16 years old, if I had any idea that I was going to put on that much weight, I would have exercised with a lot more faithfulness. I would have, with much more regularity, with much more passion. But I didn't do it. And now I look like this. Forty, fifty years down the line. Be careful. It'll catch up with you. If you're not doing what you ought to be doing. Think about this as a congregation. What do we as a church, if the Lord stays his coming, and he keeps Cedar Creek Baptist Church here in this community, what will we look like in 25 years, 30 years, 50 years? Have we thought about that? Do you ever give any thought about that? Or are your thoughts merely focused on today? You know, we would do well to put ourselves on a strict spiritual regimen, religious regimen, today, not tomorrow, not next week, not next month or next year. Well, if we were to do that, if we really took all this seriously and began looking these years ahead, what might that sort of spiritual exercise regimen look like? Let's take our cue from the verse that we've just read, verse 29. We should always be looking to the Lord. Seek the Lord your God, Moses said, as opposed to the idols. The idols will lead you only into death, into darkness, into destruction. But rather, seek the Lord your God. Our eyes must always be focused on God, mustn't they? Not upon the pastor, not upon the pastoral staff, not upon others, not upon our circumstances, but upon God. Seek the Lord your God. Now, you don't really see it. We don't really catch it in the English. But there's an intensity involved here in the Hebrew language in this verse. In the Hebrew, the verb form, if it was fully translated, it would read something like this: utterly seek the Lord your God. That is, with every fiber of your being, with every strength that the Lord has given you, with all of your possessions, seek the Lord your God. This is the number one priority for the people of Israel, and it must be the number one priority for ourselves. Not our own personal comfort. Not this or that. But we must seek the Lord our God, to know Him and to follow after Him. And we would do well, as we're thinking about this spiritual regimen, not merely to seek the Lord utterly with all that we have and all that we are, but to kind of add on to that, to do so with a passion. Moses says you must do this with all your heart and with all your soul. This is not a part-time business that we are about. Too often today, we really do compartmentalize all things church and all things Christian, all things Bible, don't we? That all that stuff is stuff we take care of on a Sunday morning or a Wednesday evening or in a small group when we... Oh, no, 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 no. We must be busy about seeking the Lord and His ways with all our heart and all our soul. I love what Charles Spurgeon said about this in one of his sermons, and I quote, "To the man who really possesses Christianity, it is his life. He is not a man and a Christian, but he is all a Christian. He lives Christianity, he eats it, he drinks it, he sleeps it, he walks it." Is that your testimony? Or is it something you merely kind of tag on to everything else? We must always be looking to the Lord. As Moses says, we must do so with a passion, with our hearts and our souls. And know that there's a promise attached here, a wonderful promise. When you seek Him in this way, church, believer, the promise is you will find Him. Again, we don't pick it up so much in the English, but in the Hebrew, and I'll not bore you with the details, but I'm going to tell you in the Hebrew, this promise is worded in such a way as to demonstrate absolute certainty. You seek the Lord in this manner. It's not that perhaps you'll find Him and be pleased and satisfied. It's not that if everything goes just right, you know, you're going to find the Lord. It's not a probability statement. It is a statement of certainty. You seek the Lord in this way, and you will find Him. And you will walk with Him, and He will walk with you. That's the promise to the people of Israel as they go into this land. Think about it. Define God. Define God. Do you remember that first moment in which you came face to face with God and you found Him, He found you? Do you remember that? Do you remember the joy? Remember that? Oh. And not only to find him initially, but to walk with him day by day by day. I quote Spurgeon again. Brad, I love Charles Spurgeon. I learned a long time ago that if I'm going to prepare a sermon on a particular text, the last resource I go to is Spurgeon. Because if I go to him first, my temptation is what? Just to preach Spurgeon. I mean, you can't do much better. But I do like to pull a quote from him from time to time. Here's another one. I would not change my blessed estate for all the world calls good or great. And while my faith can keep her hold, I envy not the sinner's gold. I tell you, it's not the things of this world that catch our gaze. It's not the things of this life that give us joy, but rather the things of God. What might we glean from Moses' instruction to the people of Israel as we as a congregation kind of walk through this in-between time? We've talked about the in-between time on more than one occasion. Let me give you one more bit of counsel and advice before we move to Mark or wherever the Lord leads us over the next few weeks. But let me just kind of pull out of the crowd that is here some individuals. Not by name. I just about scared you there. A Sunday school teacher. You have served faithfully for years. You have sought the Lord and sought to be faithful to Him. What must you continue to do? You must keep seeking the Lord and following after Him. Businessman, we have those businessmen in here with us. Though you have successfully built your business and given much of it away, because you see that in the Scriptures the Lord would have you to do that. You have followed after the Lord. You have sought Him and you have faithfully followed Him. What must you continue to do? Well, keep seeking the Lord. Mother, you have raised your children to be kind, to be upright. They grow up, move out of the house. What must you continue to do? Keep seeking the Lord and keep seeking the Lord on behalf of your children. Never stop praying. Moms, you know what I'm talking about. You just never stop praying for them, do you? You see, this is not part-time business that we're involved in here this morning. This is a lifetime thing. It's a day after day after day time thing. I could speak to school teachers, administrators. I could speak to young people and old men. Oh, doesn't matter who it is. What would Moses say to us this morning? He would say, seek the Lord. Utterly seek Him. Make this the primary business of your life. Do so with all your heart and with all your soul. And you will be satisfied. You will find Him. And you will have in Him all that He delights to give to His people. That's where we ought to be as a church, always seeking the Lord. I trust that that will be the description that anyone looking here would give of Cedar Creek Baptist Church. Well, that's of people who always seem to be seeking God. May it always be so. We're going to sing a closing hymn in just a moment. And you know what we do here at the end of the service. We sing. It is an opportunity. The church is gathered congregationally. It is an opportunity, if there's that matter you need to share with me or with pastoral staff, the ministry staff. Perhaps there's something that you need to share with the congregation. Maybe a word of testimony of God's faithfulness. Maybe the Lord has saved you and you've never shared that publicly. We would delight to rejoice with you in your personal testimony of salvation. It might be a prayer need. I know in our Sunday school class this morning, we shared with one another some very serious prayer matters, and we took them together before the Lord. That's what we do as a congregation, isn't it? Maybe you would share that with your home church. Maybe the Lord is directing you here to Cedar Creek Baptist Church to plant your life here to walk with us, to seek after the Lord and seek to serve Him faithfully. I tell you, you need to come and say that to the congregation. I want to join you. The Lord is leading me to join you. Would you receive me? It might be some other matter, whatever it is. There's nothing particularly magical about this piece of carpet up here. I need to say that. There's nothing particularly spiritual, I think, about taking the pastor's hand and shaking it. The Lord is not far off, is He? He can be found wherever we might seek Him. But the congregation is gathered. And this is not a bad time. In fact, it's a good time. If there's that that we need to share with one another. Let's stand as our musicians come and we're going to sing. Let me pray for us. Father, as we have heard Your word this morning, Father, take Your word and settle it deeply into our hearts and our minds, that we might always be seeking You and finding You, and that to Your glory. We ask in Jesus' name.